I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Katie Lambert, and joining me today is Sarah Dowdy. How are you, Sarah?
I'm good, Katie.
Good. We keep getting emails requesting more about Canadian history, and I have something close to Canadian history today.
Spooky Arctic mystery.
So we're going to go ahead and say that counts. We're talking about Sir John Franklin's lost expedition. John Franklin was one of 12 kids, and his parents wanted him to become a clergyman, but he loved the sea, and he was absolutely sure that was his destiny from a young age.
So he entered the Royal Navy at 14, where he had a varied career. He took part in expeditions to Australia, he fought in the Battle of Trafalgar, and he commanded the Trent on an 1818 Arctic expedition.
In an attempt to reach the North Pole, and from 1818 to 1822, he conducted an overland expedition from Hudson Bay to the Arctic, I think, and surveyed part of the coast, parts that people had never seen before, a large swath of the coast, and published a book about it, The Narrative of a Journey to the Shores of the Polar Sea.
And did another narrative a few years later after a second overland expedition in the same region. And during this time, it was post-Napoleonic Wars, the British Navy really needed something to do, basically. And
they needed a purpose.
Yeah. And so, largely thanks to Sir John Barrow, they decided their purpose was going to be to navigate the Northwest Passage. And the Northwest Passage had been an idea floated around since Elizabethan times, even.
Right.
But it was essentially that there was a way to take a ship from the Atlantic to the Pacific, going above Canada.
And they knew it was there somewhere. They just didn't know where.
Somewhere in all that ice between all those islands, they knew there was a way. But it took a very long time to find it, and even longer to actually navigate it.
So in 1845, they decide they're going to launch another expedition, and Franklin is not their first choice.
No.
Because he's older. He's 59, and they think that might be too old for someone who's going to be in such strenuous conditions.
Yeah, it's basically seemed like his naval career was over. He's been the governor of Tasmania for several years. He's been knighted. it doesn't seem like he's the man to choose for your Arctic expedition.
But he's convinced that he's the right one. And I think someone said something to him about being 60, and he said, no, no, I'm 59. Let's make that clear. So it's a go, and Franklin is their choice. And the ships they were going to take were state-of-the-art at the time. They had iron-reinforced hulls and steam engines. They were very well equipped.
Yeah, they have 3 years' worth of canned food on board, which partly ends up being a problem, but we'll get to that. So they dock in Greenland in July of 1845, and they send home a few men and a batch of letters. If you were one of the men to be sent home there, you were very lucky because things didn't go well from there on out.
The last sighting of them is by British whalers north of Baffin Island at the entrance to Lancaster Sound in July of 1845, and then they disappear and go completely off the map.
So what happened?
Search parties were sent in 1847 to answer that exact question because 2 years was too long. They should have heard something by now.
Yeah.
And the searches keep going.
Yeah, by 1850, as many as 14 ships were in the area at the same time looking for them. This turned out to be kind of the romantic adventure of the age, searching for Franklin and his lost crew. And consequently, a lot of information about the Northwest Passage was discovered during these rescue attempts. But we're going to kind of give the overview of what happened to Franklin and his men during this time. This was all pieced together over years and years, but...
And something like 30 expeditions to go and find them. They each came back with little pieces.
Yeah. So in 1845-6, they winter at Beachy Island, and three crewmen die there.
And they'd started with, 129 people?
Yeah, okay. 28 or so.
So the numbers are dwindling slowly.
Yeah.
In 1846, these ships, which were named Erebus and Terror, not a good name for ships, leave Beachy Island, and they sail down Peel Sound to King William Island.
And then by September of 1846, the ships get trapped in the ice off of King William Island in Victoria Strait. And so they winter there. And there's a note that was found later from May 28th, 1847, saying that things were okay. You know, they were stuck in the ice still, but it was going all right.
But on June 11th, 1847, as close as we can tell, Franklin died. And he is the head of everything, of the whole expedition. And he's one of very few men in the crew who actually has Arctic experience.
And things get bad then, because that's when the ice from the winter should have thawed and they should have been able to move on, and it doesn't. So they winter again on King William Island. Obviously, there are questions of food that are going to come up soon, so they have to start making difficult decisions in the next year about what they're going to do.
And they abandon their ships on April 22nd, 1848, and decide to try to make a go of it.
And in a note that was later found, by April 25th, 1848, 24 men had died, and the survivors were marching south to the Black River. And things got very messy there. They resorted to cannibalism, and a lot of them were addled by what later looked like lead poisoning. And some people say the lead poisoning was a result of poorly tinned foods.
Right.
The foods were apparently supplied by kind of a cut rate dealer, and lead was supposed to have actually dripped into the cans from the soldering. But an author of Ice Blink, Scott Cookman, actually has a different theory, and he thinks that botulism in the cans caused all of the mental and physical issues that happened and was responsible for why these men died on the ice, not on the ship, on the ice when they were away from reliable cooking sources, because proper heating will
That kills the Clostridium spores.
Yeah.
But if they don't have a stove to heat it.
If you're out on the ice and maybe you have a dinky little stove or not a stove at all. And so he kind of thought that explained why they all die out there and not on the ships.
And there was also evidence of scurvy, which is what happens when you don't get enough vitamin C. And scurvy and lead poisoning lead to the same kinds of weakness that make you unable to do the hard work that's necessary to do in the Arctic.
To walk across the ice. And they weren't adopting Inuit ways of dealing with the weather, and they were carrying lots of unnecessary supplies with them. So it was not, they weren't equipped for an overland expedition at
no,
all.
The list of their supplies, I wish I had it on me, is just so strange. It wasn't at all survival
no.
stuff. It was things like books.
Silver.
Yes. You don't need silver if you're trapped in the Arctic. Yeah. For future reference, for all our listeners, don't bring the silver.
The first search for Franklin goes out in 1847. The first official search isn't until 1848. And over the years, a lot of the expeditions get very close to where Franklin's ships were actually abandoned. But there's a lot of delay. And one of the reasons is when ships were over there looking at Peel Sound, where the boats went, it seemed impossible that they could have gone in that direction because the ice cover was so heavy.
Right, so they just skipped over it. And of course, there was a huge cold snap going on in the Arctic at this time too, so these weren't normal conditions for that area.
The early searches turned up some accounts from Inuit who had seen the explorers and had stories about starving men. There was even one account that was taken much, much later from an Inuit in 1929 saying that some of the boats were remanned and they knew of large vessels that lay on the other side of the island, basically far away from where they're supposed to have been.
And they also said that because the winter was so cold, they too were having a really hard time finding food and hunting. So if the crew was depending on the locals for food, they didn't have any to give.
Well, and it's likely that the crew wouldn't ask for help too.
They were self-sufficient British men.
Yeah, Royal Navy men, exactly. In the process of the search, the Northwest Passage is actually completed, although it's by several ships and sled. It's not completed
by the one guy,
one ship until the 20th century, I believe. But in 1859, there is a very important search mission sent out. The Royal Navy was effectively done with this after getting...
They've been looking for years.
Yeah, and then they felt like they had gotten back enough information about the men, but Franklin's widow wasn't satisfied.
Jane Lady Franklin was the first woman to receive the Founders Medal of the Royal Geographical Society because of everything she'd done to organize these expeditions. She was determined that they would at least find some concrete proof that the men were dead.
So she hires Captain Francis Leopold McClintock, who had actually been on several earlier search missions, and during some of those had really developed the art of sledging across the land and learned a lot of the Inuit customs and helped prepare future Arctic explorers for conditions.
And he was very effective because he used all of these other resources. And his crew found skeletons of the Franklin expedition, I think only four of them.
Yeah, but most importantly, he finds that note, which has the first message saying that everything is okay, and then the later message, abandoning ship,
okay.
Lots of people dying, we're walking, finds it in a pile of stones on the icy island. It's very creepy.
It is, and I mean, we'll never know entirely what happened. These are just, again, what historians and scientists are able to piece together from the evidence that they had. So there are things we're sure of, like there was too much lead in the bodies, there was evidence of scurvy, there was definitely cannibalism from what they can tell from the bones. But some of it we'll never quite know.
Yeah. And a very strange thing to think of today is icebreaker luxury cruises go right up by the island where they all died now. It's strange to think how accessible all that is. And actually, the Northwest Passage is open. It first opened in 2007. Enough ice had melted that it was considered fully navigable. And it happened again in 2008, along with the Northeast Passage, which made the North Pole circumnavigable for the first time in 125,000 years.
That is insane. See, that's why we need your green knowledge on the podcast. And I'll end with a memorial by Tennyson, who was a kinsman through marriage to Franklin. And he said, "Not here. The white north has thy bones, and thou heroic sailor soul art passing on thine happier voyage now toward no earthly pole." And you had mentioned a rather ironic fact that happened from that memorial poem.
Yeah, another ill-fated polar explorer, the American Adolphus Greely, became fascinated by the Arctic by a visit to London where he read those words. So
that's what happens when you romanticize tragedy. So if you'd like to learn more about survival, we've got all kinds of survival articles on the website. And check out the Stuff You Missed in History blog at www.howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the Stuff You Missed in History Class blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.